Stay tuned to the Black Coffee Channel, home of the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Radio program.
I knew the mob wouldn't go down without a fight, but this is different. They've crossed the line.
You crossed the line first, sir. You squeezed them, you hammered them to the point of desperation. And in their desperation, they turned to a man they didn't fully understand.
Criminals aren't complicated, Alfred. We just need to figure out what he's after.
With respect, Master Wayne, perhaps this is a man you don't fully understand either. A long time ago, I was in Burma. My friends and I were working for the local government. They were trying to buy the loyalty of tribal leaders by bribing them with precious stones. But their caravans were being raided in a forest north of Rangoon by a bandit. So we went looking for the stones. But in 6 months, we never met anyone who traded with him. One day, I saw a child playing with a ruby the size of a tangerine. The bandit had been throwing them away.
So why steal them?
Well, because he thought it was good sport. Because some men aren't looking for anything logical, like money. They can't be bought, bullied, reasoned, or negotiated with. Some men just want to watch the world burn.
Cedric Muhammad. To the Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.
Can you picture my prophecy? Stress in the city, the cops are stopping me. The project's full of bullets, the bodies is dropping. There ain't no stopping me. Constantly moving while making millions. Witnessing killings, leaving dead bodies in the abandoned buildings. Carries the children because they're illing. Addicted to killing and the appeal from the cat villain. Without feeling, but will they last or be blasted? Hard-headed bastard. Maybe you're listening in this casket. The aftermath. More bodies being buried. I'm losing my homies in a hurry. They relocating to the cemetery. Got me worried, stressing my business blurry. The question is, will I live? No one in the world loves me. I'm headed for danger. Don't trust strangers for one in the chamber. Whenever I'm feeling this anger, don't wanna make excuses. Cause this is how it is. What's the use unless we're shooting? No one notices the youth. It's just me against the world, baby.
Cedric Muhammad.
It's me against the world.
Cedric Muhammad. Tuned in to the Watchman, Cedric Muhammad.
Me against the world. I got nothing to lose. It's just me against the world, baby.
I got nothing to lose.
Cedric Muhammad.
Could somebody help me? I'm out here all by myself. See, ladies and stones, baby Capone. Living wealthy, pictures of my birth on the surface. What I'm dreaming, seeing daddy seeing full of crooked demons. Already crazy and screaming. I guess them nightmares as a child had me scared, but left me prepared for. Another rap for a crooked outlaw, a veteran, a villain, a young thug.
Every day there's more death, and plus I'm no less. I'm seeing more reasons for me to proceed with thieves. Scheme on a scheme and lead every screaming. Cause ain't no
fucking stacker.
My nuts is cracked up. I'm about to act up. Go to the Mac up. Now watch me clack up. Try make a fact up. But yo, it ain't working. And evil's working. I can see him smirking when I guess the purpose. So what? Go put some work in and make my mail. Make a sales. Risk a 25 with an L. But oh well.
You are tuned in to the Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.
It's just me against the world, baby.
You are tuned in to the Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.
It's just me against the world, baby.
Cedric Muhammad.
It's just me against the world, baby. The question I wonder is after death, after my last breath, when will I finally get to rest through this suppression? They punish the people that's asking questions and those that possess. Still from the ones without possessions, a message I'm blessed. To make it stop, study your lessons, don't settle for less.
Even the genius asks questions, be grateful for blessings. Don't ever change, keep your essence. The power is in the people and politics we address. Always do your best, don't let the pressure make you panic. And when you get stranded and things don't go the way you planned it, dreaming the riches, in a position to making a difference. Politicians are hypocrites, they don't want to listen. If I'm insane, the fame made a proper change. It wasn't nothing like the game, it's just me against the world.
You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel. Cedric Muhammad.
That's right. I know it seems hard sometimes, but remember one thing. Through every dark night, there's a bright day after that. So no matter how hard it gets, stick your chest out, keep your head up, and handle it.
Cedric Muhammad.
July 15th, 2009. Let me finish with my Jacob's Cross summary. Again, I think if you have Time Warner Cable and Comcast in certain markets, the Africa Channel is there. Jacob's Cross, 9 p.m. weeknights. Now, I caught a Jacob's Cross marathon this weekend. I still have a few shows to catch up on. Okay? But we can enjoy this together. Now that I have taken care of the affair of the heart and letting Kent King know, nothing could ever come between us. I can make a Pan-African power move to slide over from the Quatermains, the Corinthos, the Cassadines, the Spencers, to the Makubas. Jacob's Cross. Doesn't take long to catch up. It's only about 10 actors in the whole thing anyway, but never mind that. I'm going to talk about the Swimming Pool Discrimination Act. Some of you get ready. You're not going to like what I have to say, I don't think. So the story begins when Jacob, who's living a prosperous and happy life in South Africa, gets offered a deal with immeasurable backing from a large Nigerian firm. Determined to realize his dream of accessing a new energy source, the deal offers him the perfect opportunity of making it happen. He's adamantly warned by his mother to stay away from the Nigerian dynasty and its business, but refuses to take her advice and soon finds himself in a negotiation that will change his life forever. He starts receiving strange phone calls from unknown sources, which result in even stranger questions from the police. Despite all this, nothing can prepare him for what he discovers when he eventually agrees to go to Lagos, Nigeria to visit his mentor, Chief Abiyomi. The revelation he discovers sends him on an epic quest in which he learns that in order to fulfill his dreams, he must be prepared to lose everything first. Let me give you a few sentences on each character, each of the main characters. Jacob Magubu. Makubu. Yeah, laugh at me. All my Africans out there, you can laugh. It's horrible to hear me with these pronunciations, but the so-called American Negro will be overcome. I'm learning Swahili as we speak. Jacob's intelligent, attractive, confident, and successful. Brought up in exile, traveling around Africa with his politically active parents, Jacob went to good schools in the UK and the United States and did his tertiary education at London Business School. He returned to South Africa in the late 1990s and is a rising star in the business world, the son of a legendary jazz singer and a liberation hero who lost his life to the struggle. Jacob's a fierce entrepreneur and involved with various consortiums. Next character, Prospero Brand. Prospero's the grandson of one of the landlords of the Witwatersrand, a once exceptionally wealthy and influential family. He's estranged from his family, whose empire has been crumbling over the last 20 years. His own fortune has made him, he has made entirely himself in the boardrooms, and in closing a deal, he has the instincts of a street fighter. Prospero and Jacob met during their studies in London, and their relationship has grown into a business partnership. He's white. Lerato, Jacob's girlfriend, Lerato is an ex-beauty queen who works in PR and publicity for an events company. She's a brittle, well, I'm not going to read this. Anyway, you can check out Lerato, weeknights on the Africa Channel. Let me skip over some of these other characters. We get to the queen. Let me read Chief Abiomi. A powerful man in Nigeria, Chief Abiomi has an empire consisting of oil concessions, hotels, and construction companies. He doesn't suffer fools, and he has a strong set of values that he lives by, which aren't shared by everyone else. He's expedient when necessary, but lives by the notion of causing no unnecessary harm. Bola Abiomi. Now, this is Bola Abiomi is like the J.R. Ewing of this show. For those of you that watch Dallas. Bola Abiomi, as the only acknowledged son of Chief Abiomi, Bola is secure in the knowledge that he's going to inherit his father's empire. Bola is ruthless and unstable and will stop at nothing to get what he wants. He's involved the family's many businesses and lives the high life. In between being a dangerous schemer, which makes his father mistrust his ability to lead the family empire. Now here's the queen. The rock of this show. Some of you may know her from her other pursuits. Folake Abiomi. Folake Abiomi. They say it either way. Folake Abiomi. That's her right there. Folake is Chief Abiomi's favorite child and her father's logical successor. If she weren't a woman. Folake's mission is to continue the Abiomi lineage, which results in her and Jacob becoming allies. She's the keeper of the flame and the one who understands best of all who her father is and what he wants. An incredible show. You watch about 2 episodes and you'll be glued. I haven't been able. I've done 5. I think I've done 5 in a row. But Folake's real name is Moki Makura, an excellent actress, also author of the book Africa's Greatest Entrepreneurs. No one can replace Kent King, but Moki and I are an email dialogue. And Folake died the other night. I sent her an email. I let her know that I saw her die. And she said, stay tuned. Things are not always what they seem. Check out Moki Makura, her book, Africa's Greatest Entrepreneurs. More on that in the future. I would say she embodies a lot of what we've talked about. Conscious artists. I think Jim Brown would have no problem with Moki. Okay? MOKY MAKURA. Moki Makura, her book, Africa's Greatest Entrepreneur. She is also the star in Jacob's Cross, Folake Abiomi. She is the favorite child and daughter of the chief. Okay, let me line you all up on this story about the black children who were discriminated against at this private swim club. I really can't take too many stories like this in the future, but I think my response may be a little bit different than the civil rights activist establishment. Let me know your thoughts. It's a tough subject for me because I think the solution is just basic, how you deal with stuff like this.
Swimming once a week at the spacious Huntington Valley Club near Philadelphia. It sounded ideal for 65 kids, described as black and Hispanic, at Creative Steps Daycare Summer Camp.
I was excited. The parents and children were excited.
But when the youngsters showed up at the pool June 29th, after the day camp signed and paid a $1,900 contract, this happened.
The children came running down the hill saying, "Miss Wright, Miss Wright, those people up there are saying, what are those black kids doing in the pool?"
12-year-old Marcus Allen is her son, says he was sitting outside the pool and heard white adults say this.
He was like, "Oh, why are these black kids here?" And then they were saying, "Oh, I'm afraid they might do something to my children because I don't know if they might steal, might try to steal some of my stuff or might try to, like, harm my children." And I was amazed that they would think something like this because we're, like, just like you. Like, we're just like your kids.
Not enough room.
Mrs. Wright says the swim club's director told her he was embarrassed, held an emergency board meeting, and called her back the next day to say they could not come back.
And he said the membership said, "Let the chips fall where they may."
You know, Marcus, I see tears coming down your face. Why does this make you cry?
Because it's just kind of, like, sad that, like, people were still thinking like this when I felt like these days was over.
This is 2009. Children should not be subjected to that.
The swim club's director is quoted by local media saying the day camp kids changed the, quote, atmosphere and complexion of the club. A club member reacted.
"I'll be asking for the president of the club's resignation today because I think the comment that he made, although taken out of context, was probably one of the stupidest comments I ever heard."
He claims the club was simply overcrowded, not racist. He said two other unidentified day camps, both non-minority, also got the boot. Senator Arlen Specter put the club on notice in a letter, quote, "Without getting into all the legal issues, it is my suggestion that you promptly reinstate the contract and welcome Mrs. Alethea Wright's group back to the pool. Whether they accept is up to them." The club issued a response denying race had anything to do with their decision. Quote, "We underestimated the capacity of our facilities. Our Valley Club deplores discrimination in any form." Susan Candiotti, CNN, Huntington Valley, Pennsylvania.
Now that makes me sick for a few reasons. First of all, the child that you heard, he must have been about no more than like 8. Now here he is repeating something obviously he heard, saying that he didn't think that white people felt like this in this day and time. That was his point. And then there was a woman who said children should not be subjected to this. I agree with both of those sentiments. But let me ask you all something. Why is the remedy protesting people who do not want you around them, asking them to let you in? I mean, isn't it common sense to not go where you're not wanted? This is why I think that in some ways, extreme dependence on civil rights activism, extreme, is hurting us. Build your own damn pool. Now, you would rather have an 8-year-old, 7-year-old, 6-year-old, black or Latino, all original people, cry, be interviewed on CNN. You'd rather have that than build your own swim club. I think there is some swim black. There's only like one black owned swim club in like Pennsylvania, I think. This is disgusting. I mean, when is this going to stop? People don't want you in their facility. You turn that into a cause, but you don't turn building your own facility into a cause. What the hell is wrong with us? If civil rights activists want to do what they do, I support them. I support anyone fighting for civil rights and human rights. But the real work, to me, the real work is in community development. So now we're going to protest people who are obviously racist, begging them to let us in. Build your own damn swim facility. I mean, this is sickening. Begging someone to accept you that doesn't want you. Now, if I was in a relationship and I could describe this scenario, say I'm in a relationship, say you're in a relationship. A person says, "I don't want to be with you." That's the equivalent of me continuing to ignore the person saying they don't want to be with me and begging them to take me.
accept me. How stupid is that? But no, when we do it in a political context, it's called activism. And I hope we have set the case as to why this is the phrase of the day.
Ending whackness in the name of blackness. You are listening to the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Show only at blackcoffeechannel.com.
I mean, people will literally call that freedom fighting. Begging racist people to accept you into their facility. Paying them. Not just begging to get in, but begging them to accept your money. Help me. Help me. I mean, that's our struggle. That's considered part of our struggle. But building your own facility is not part of your struggle. Let me make it a little more poignant for you. Let's go down. That was Pennsylvania. Let's go down to Mississippi. I'm going to keep the subject on water. This is what our people in Mississippi have to accept, because we won't mobilize around making sure that the basic needs and wants of us as human beings are not taken care of by ourselves, but relying on others who have proven that they don't care.
We have a story tonight about a community that has been left high and dry, literally dry. There are not many people in this Mississippi community, but we were surprised to learn that in 2009, there are still Americans unable to get something almost all of us take for granted, clean running water. Here's Steve Ostensami.
In Sunflower County, Mississippi, in the hot and humid Mississippi Delta, time has stood still for 40 residents in this small community. They have no clean running water.
It started off with 6 months. Went from 6 months to 9 months.
And now it's been 6 years since the well dried up, since the county said it would help, since their congressman and every other elected official started giving them the runaround.
What they said is the community is not large enough to bring water. But I can't understand that. We have to have water.
Janice Davis has to drive 5 miles to her son's garden hose to fill her jugs with water and then haul them home.
You do this twice a week?
Yes. I have hauled water so long until I am just tired. But what can I do?
Across Mississippi, residents get their water from water authorities that provide service to whom and where they please. This map shows the different authorities and the gaps where residents like those here have no access to water service.
It's very odd to this day and time that you don't have clean warm water. And it's supposed to be America.
We talked with their county supervisor. He says he's trying to convince the closest water authority to bring water here, but says it would cost $1 million.
I'm just telling you that Sunflower County does not have enough money in their budget to do this necessary work.
We got wireless internet. Some of us just don't have running water.
Someone from the county or something brought this out.
And said, here's your water.
Yeah, just like we have some horses out here.
The residents have now taken their case to the USDA, hoping the federal government will come through. In a statement, the U.S. Department of Agriculture said the residents should find an existing water association that will agree to expand. That hasn't happened.
It may be because we all are just poor black.
They've tried and tried and say their government is still not working.
And I just load them in and take off again.
Steve Ostensami, ABC News in the Mississippi Delta.
I mean, why is that acceptable? The government, the members of Congress, the county, the local officials are not going to bring water to these people. Why don't we go down there? So many of us want to go and take this cause up in Africa. But you have this going on in Mississippi. It's not a reactive step. You need water, you go, you build the facilities, whether it's through a business or whether it's through donations like you do when you say you're helping less fortunate people that don't live in America. You have this going on in Mississippi. So the approach will be, we're going to spend the next 5 to 10 years asking the U.S. government, members of Congress, city council, mayor, and county commissioners to do something that they refuse to do. same thing with the swimming pool. We're going to continue to beg private clubs that don't want you there to accept not only you, but your money. That is whacktivism. So when you hear about Black Wall Street and the work that's going on in Newark with some brothers I went to school with, it's refreshing that there are some people, I'm sure that they're working with the benefit of government programs to help with the city of Newark, I'm sure, even though there's been some red tape, or maybe New Jersey. But the assertion and what is really at the root of Black Wall Street, and I'll continue to say the real Black Wall Street in terms of financial power, was not Tulsa, Oklahoma. It was Durham, North Carolina. In terms of financial power, it was Durham, North Carolina. Study that. 191, 200 businesses we heard in Tulsa, Oklahoma. How many do they have now? Not one private swim club. Maybe one, I think, in all of Pennsylvania. Black owned. I'll let you all think about it. Until you're willing to put your money behind what it is you say you support and do it yourself and find a way to appeal to the incentives of people, whether it's profit motivation or psychic income, which means people get a sense of fulfillment, accomplishment, charity, we're never going to get very far. When I come back, I'll read you the story of the minority, quote unquote, minority broadcasters who are asking for a bailout. I'm going to read to you their reasoning according to this article. Should we continue to just simply ask for bailouts? Crumbs diminishing from the table was not much anyway. It was just crumbs. I think minority broadcasters and Black talk radio just need to offer a better product. That's what I'm trying to do. We'll be right back. July 15th, 2009. Will I put on skinny jeans in hour number 5? The people want to know. I'll hold up the tight jeans in a minute.
You talked about your father on this trip. How much of your thoughts about Africa are affected by his experiences, the problems he faced in Kenya with corruption, with tribalism?
I think his story, but more broadly, the story of my family in Kenya, which still continues, informs how I think about this. I'm reminded of the fact that on the one hand, you have people of extraordinary talent and energy and drive, some of who've succeeded, but others who have been blocked because they find themselves in the circumstances that Africans all across the continent find themselves. Can't get adequate school fees to get the education they need. Try to get a job and turns out that you've got to pay a bribe to get that job. Living in small villages in which basic infrastructure still isn't provided and the public health system isn't adequate, so that you're seeing children who at a very early age start having significant disadvantages. Those are all things that I've seen and witnessed, and those are stories that I've heard directly from people who I know. And so when I think about these development issues, they're not abstractions to me. I can put a face and a name to what people are going through, and that makes a difference.
Some of the images from Ghana that we... I was in Ghana this weekend following President Obama and his family while they spent 2 days in the West African nation. I spoke with the president at Cape Coast Castle, where he'd just taken a tour with his family. He just visited the dungeons where countless enslaved Africans were held for shipment, literally shipment as human cargo, to be sent to a life in bondage in South America, the United States, and the Caribbean. The castle is a haunting place, a place visited by many African Americans now looking to retrace their roots.
Do you think what happened here still has resonance in America? That the slave experience still is something that should be talked about and should be remembered and should be present in everyday life?
Well, I think that the experience of slavery is like the experience of the Holocaust. I think it's one of those things you don't forget about. I think it's important that the way we think about it and the way it's taught is not one in which there's simply a victim and a victimizer, and That's the end of the story. I think the way it has to be thought about, the reason it's relevant is because whether it's what's happening in Darfur or what's happening in the Congo or what's happening in too many places around the world, you know, the capacity for cruelty still exists. The capacity for discrimination still exists. The capacity to think about people who are different, not just on the basis of race, but on the basis of religion or the basis of sexual orientation or gender, still exists. And so, you know, trying to use these kinds of extraordinary moments to widen the lens and make sure that we're all reflecting on how we're treating each other, I think is something that I want my kids to think about, and I want every child to think about.
How'd you explain it to Sasha Malia?
Well, you know, you try to explain that people were willing to degrade others because they appeared differently, and you know, you tried to actually get them to engage in the imaginative act of what it would be like if they were snatched away from mom and dad and sent to some place they had never seen before. But, you know, part of what you also try to do with kids is to get them to imagine themselves on the other side as being the slave merchant. And you know, that slave merchant might have loved their children and gone to that, you know, place of worship up right above the dungeon, and get them to make sure that they're constantly asking themselves questions about whether they're treating people fairly and whether they are examining their own behavior and how it affects others.
They say this is the door of return for, right, for African Americans who are, right, revisiting Ghana. And I talked to one African American lady yesterday who said that coming here is such a powerful experience that she actually decided to move here. Mm-hmm. I know you've met with many African Americans, yeah, who decided to move here. Do you understand? They say that there's a sense of coming home. Do you understand that feeling?
Well, you know, I will tell you, the first time that I traveled to Africa, I think that there is a special sense for African Americans of somehow connecting up with a part of yourself that you might not have even been aware was there. Now, obviously, for me, it was different because I was directly meeting relatives and learning about a father I didn't know. But I do think there's a sense for a lot of African Americans that it's a profound life-changing experience. The interesting thing, though, is, you know, I've met a lot of white Americans who come to Africa and say it was a life-changing experience for them too.
This is the home where everyone comes from.
Yeah, exactly. And there is a powerful sense of tapping into something very elemental about
Africa.
Sure,
once you come, you sort of always come back.
Yeah, you do.
My man, President Obama, AC, Anderson Cooper, this is the home where everyone comes from. Did y'all hear that? Got to get to my nominee for Gangster of the Week because I need your help in identifying this person. But let me read this article about the minority broadcasters in trouble. They want a bailout. I don't know how I feel about this. On one hand, I think it's justified, but damn, how about just making a better product and getting better connected with the black consumer and business community? Minority broadcasters ask Geithner to bail them out. Minority broadcasters asked for the same kind of federal bailout afforded the auto and financial industries in a July 12th letter from 14 top executives in the group to Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner. Minority-owned broadcasters are close to becoming an extinct species, the group wrote. What will happen to the communities we serve if this once-in-a-lifetime financial crisis completely severs our access to capital and we lose our stations? The federal government for decades has advocated the importance of minority voices in the broadcast industry as a precursor to a vibrant democracy and a more inclusive society, the broadcaster said. The group includes Pierre Sutton, chairman of Inner City Broadcasting Company, which owns 18 radio stations in seven cities, and Raul Alarcon, president
president of Spanish Broadcasting Systems, which owns New York City's two largest Spanish language stations. The consortium is interested in programs that could restore credit flows to broadcasters plagued with dwindling advertising revenues. The loss of auto advertising has been particularly challenging, the group said, characterizing the situation as ironic, considering that the amount of bailout money auto manufacturers have received. Now listen to this, everybody. Listen up. The primary source of news and entertainment for millions of minority communities in the United States comes primarily from minority-owned broadcasters. It would be unconscionable to have financial institutions that have accepted billions of federal government assistance to foreclose on these vital American voices, the letter said. The group has also nudged the banking industry. I don't know, man. I feel funny about this. See, it's the same battle that I fight to build a product that will be attractive to people who not only, I guess, want to reach the audience that I have, but who want to, you know, to further their own business interest. But also folks that are, that respect the content of the program. So if you have Ford, GM, and Chrysler sponsoring the Steve Harvey Morning Show, Tom Joyner, you name it, then even though you're a minority broadcaster and you feel you're satisfying the needs of a minority community, the basis of your financial foundation is coming from outside of the community. It's the same with black elected politicians. I used to talk to Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney about this all the time. Cynthia McKinney had ideological agreement with white progressives. She was supported by black voters, but her campaign contributions came from the Muslim, American Muslim immigrant community, the largest amount. It doesn't work. So those of us who claim to be in the business of serving black people, sooner or later, or Latino, Spanish, all original people, sooner or later, you're going to have to get your financial foundation from the people you claim to be serving. Now, I'm all for fighting against discrimination with federal communications laws, satellite spectrum violations, any type of discrimination, I'm for fighting. But to go to the federal government for a bailout, when you have billions of dollars circulating through the black community that you don't attract in the form of advertising, yet you claim to be serving that community, then it would appear to me that you would not be indispensable. You can only be disappearing, or what was the actual quote? Let me read this article. The actual quote in the article was, "Minority-owned broadcasters are close to becoming an extinct species." Well, you can't become extinct if you're satisfying a need or want of people. It's the same for me. If this show goes under, it won't be because the government didn't help me. It'll be because I was not able to satisfy the needs and wants of the listening audience as well as prospective advertisers. That's it. We all live in the same universe, breathe the same earth. Let's not make this something it's not. Every community can get money from its own community, except it seems minority broadcasters. It says here, the loss of automobile advertising has been particularly challenging, the group said, characterizing the situation as ironic, considering that the amount of money the bailout auto manufacturers have received. Well, if you go to the Congressional Black Caucus, you can listen to my show. You can listen to any popular talk show. And I would say, with the exception of the Nation of Islam, who funds its own conventions, etc., but the Nation, you know, does have broader relations with friends from around the world who provide support from time to time, of course. Can anybody fund themselves? I work with me on this. I'm gonna talk about my new favorite show, Tiny and Toya, in a minute, and I may serenade Kent King a second time to prove my loyalty to her, even though I've crossed over to Jacob's Cross. But if you have an interest, if you want to talk about this subject,
It's near and dear to my heart. I just have a problem with minority broadcasters going to the federal government when they don't, I guess, go to their own black business community and black consumers. Why don't you sit down with the black audience and tell them, we're not going to survive unless you all start advertising. We're not going to survive unless the businesses in the community consider the content and the programming that we offer as viable way for them to reach potential consumers and market their products and services. It's that simple. Same thing has to happen with my show. So let's live and die on the basis of that, not on whether we can get the attention of the government talking about we are an extinct species. If you're extinct, it's because nobody needs you and you've been overcome. That's why I love the Native American people, original people as well. It could be six Native Americans in a room, so-called American Indians, and they will still call themselves a nation. The mentality never dies that they have to do something for themselves. Minority broadcasters ask Timothy Geithner for a bailout. How do you feel about that? I mean, how is it that BET or Viacom can provide black content through VH1, through MTV, and through BET that's better than what the black-owned companies can do? And a lot of cases, you'll have the same professionals involved behind the scenes. I could go on and on and on and on to the break of dawn. What song was that? On and on and on, on and on and on. The break of dawn. That's Naughty by Nature, right? Rod Guignard, Culver City, California, says he does not want to see me wearing skinny jeans, but he will understand if my female audience will pay attention. Thank you, Rod. See, Rod understands. It may be a ratings maneuver on my part. Skinny jeans, perhaps in hour number 5. Rod also says, I confess that I've never watched General Hospital or any other soap opera for that matter. Oh, yes, you have, Rod. It's called The Nightly News. He says, I was in the same room while a female friend was trying to watch Dark Shadows back in the day, but I was attending to the female friend, not watching the soap. She couldn't keep her eyes on the program for too long either. Nimba from Cote d'Ivoire, Ivory Coast, he says, Cedric, I totally agree with you on this point. Why do you have to give your money to someone who not only wants to see you, doesn't want to see you, but also doesn't want to smell your money? What the hell is wrong with some black folks in this country? When are we as a black people going to take our destiny in our own hands and move on? I really don't get it. I'm mad as hell when I have heard this story happening in Philadelphia. Rich from St. Louis, he says, I completely agree. The example of a abusive relationship is perfect. If he or she or they don't like you, move on. We move on. It's just time for us to move on. Why do we continue to create sadistic experiences for them to enjoy? That's the word, Rich, sadistic. I don't know. To me, it becomes more and more clear each and every day that the government bailout thing is not going to work. The money is not there. Look at the federal deficit. Money has to be printed up just to borrow. The government is borrowing from itself, or borrowing from the Federal Reserve, and the Federal Reserve is printing up the money to buy the debt. Handwriting is on the wall. An abusive relationship. You will never catch me protesting some institution that doesn't want black children there. I will never protest them begging them to let the children in. I'm sorry. Does that mean that I am not in harmony with the civil rights movement and that I'm disrespecting the legacy of Dr. King? Is that what you're going to charge me with? Blank up out of here, man. That nonsense. I want to get to the Pope's encyclical, Charity and Truth. two more hours left in the hottest show in the diaspora. Minority broadcasters asked Timothy Geithner to bail them out. I can't get down with that. I couldn't get down with the other thing, too. What I can get down with is you all hire me or somebody that can give you better content than the people who are obviously not able to satisfy advertisers and the listening audience. It's that simple. If you need a bailout, it's because you're not bringing in enough revenue through advertising. You're not attracting a wide enough audience. And your audience does not contain a segment of business members who will support your product. Same for me. You could apply the same standard to any of us. That's what it is. But don't make it nothing else. Because folks will get in front of your face and say, well, the auto industry got bailed out. Why can't we? Well, is it business? Are you in business or are you in political lobbying? Because if you're in political lobbying, don't tell me you're in business. Just go and hire some lobbyists and get bailout money. Get earmark money. You feel me? It's the summer madness. We'll talk about Michael Jackson in a minute. Don't get me started on this, man. Get down or lay down. Make a profit or don't, or get out the way. That's what makes you extinct. You're extinct because you can't get advertising and you can't get enough of your listeners to listen to you, your audience to listen to you. So your ratings are whack. Your content is not magnetic. And you can't get the people you serve to support you. That's why you got to rely on auto companies. You're going to go to the government now. I got a lot of love for inner city broadcasting in New York City, but this is pathetic. Folks down in Mississippi begging for water to be brought. Water, of all things. Begging for water to be brought to Mississippi. Black children begging, Latino children, their parents begging to allow them to swim somewhere where people think that they are subhuman and don't even want their money. Summer madness.
Listening to the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Show only at blackcoffeechannel.com. Cedric Muhammad.
You ever heard the story of the scorpion and the frog? Huh? Hear me out. You see, there's this frog sitting by the river and a scorpion comes up to it and says, I really need to get to the other side, but I can't swim. Can you take me across on your back? Frog says, no way. If I let you on my back, you'll sting me and I'll die. Scorpion says, that doesn't make any sense. If I sting you, we'll both drown and die. Frog says, okay, hop on. So halfway across the river, the scorpion stings the frog in the back. And as they're both going down, the frog says, this doesn't make any sense. Why did you sting me? Now we're both gonna die. Scorpion says, I'm a scorpion. It's in my nature.
What? Are you calling me a scorpion?
No, I'm calling you a frog. You see, I don't want you to ever suffer under the misconception that my sense of self-preservation is stronger than my nature.
Cedric Muhammad.
Oh yeah, that was Jacob's Cross footage. Hour number four. Let's go.
You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.
Journey with me into the mind of a maniac. Doing to be a killer since I came out.
Cedric Muhammad.
A man of murderous mind state with a heart full of terror. I see the devil in the mirror. Fuck, lights out. Cause when I
get hauled on. Barrel one, catch a motherfucking flesh. Barrel two, catch a fucking heart at your chest. You see, I'm quick to lift the hammer, go click on my tech nine. So if you try to wreck mine, foolish your bedtime. Feel the blast from the chocolate bomber. Infrared and got your head like your name was Sarah Connor. Decapitation, I ain't hesitating to put you in a funeral home with a bullet in your dome. I'm hot like lava. You got a problem, I got a problem solver. And his name is Revolver. It's like a deadly game of freeze tag. I touch you with the 44 mag and you're frozen inside a body bag. Nobody iller than this graveyard filler, cap pillar. Cause I'm a natural born killer.
You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel. Cedric Muhammad.
When I open you up, cause your body is exposed to the midnight mist. All weak motherfuckers, give my ring a kiss. Cause I'm giving dirt naps. Coming with them dumb ass raps to make your lungs collapse. Perhaps you never sleep, cause every time you doze, you catch blows to the motherfucking nose. Ain't seen the sun in 66 days. Let me count the waves in a hooked up maze. I never, ever, ever made a whole state. But I'm down with Dre, like AC is down with OJ.
Cedric Muhammad. Cedric Muhammad on the Black Coffee Channel.
Michael Jackson belonged to black people, and that black people understood Michael Jackson in a way that maybe whites didn't. And the studies show it. Pew poll shows that 8 out of 10 African Americans were following this closely. There are other polls that show 2 out of 3 African Americans were following this very closely. How do you respond to that?
Well, black people understand me. And you can ask most black people that have ever heard me, know something about me. They understand me. They don't view me as the media has portrayed me. And whenever you become strong, whenever your truth will undermine the falsehoods that the society seems to be built upon, you become a threat. So when you become a threat to the powers that be, they use the power of the media first to demagnetize you by making you appear as what you are not. And after they take you away from the magnetic appeal that you have with the people, then you are either assassinated or you are made poor and raggedy. So when you get back to your people, You have no drawing power, and you have no money. So to strip Michael of his legacy, to strip him of the catalog of the Beatles and Elvis, to strip him of the great financial strength that he potentially has, is to give him back to us in his move toward self-awareness, self-love. He always loved humanity. The problem was he did not have that love so much of himself, but he was growing to see the beauty of himself.
You said he didn't have that love of himself. Talk to me more about
that. In this way, most black people, not only here, but in the Caribbean, in South America, Central America, in Africa, we have been the victims of the tyranny of white supremacy and black inferiority. So we're ashamed of the flatness of our nose, the thickness of our lips, the kinkiness of our hair. So all of the pictures that I saw on CNN while I was in Africa, they showed Michael as a 9-year-old or 10-year-old in his black color, his thick lips, his nose, his hair. And then they showed this gradual progression of Michael. And the message, you don't have to say it, the message was that when he was young, somebody told him he wasn't beautiful, and he wanted, when you have money, like most rich people in Hollywood or entertainers, movie actresses, business people who don't like their nose or their lips or their breasts or their behind or whatever they want to improve on, money makes them able to do that. So he was improving in his mind on himself by changing his nose, his lips. But the journey, that's the journey outward.
But are you saying that he didn't want to be black, that he wanted to be white or look white?
Well, the evidence is there. That's the evidence of the outward journey. But the inward journey, that's the most beautiful journey of all. He was journeying toward himself, and he's journeying toward the unification of all human beings with mutual respect. So when he made that song, it doesn't matter if you're black or white, because the outside lost its meaning. The real meaning is not the color of your skin. It's the spirit that energizes you and moves you to action. That's the real person. And that's why Jesus said, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he.
What was your relationship to the Jackson family? Michael Jackson, Jermaine Jackson.
Well, I don't know the Jackson family as well as my children. My children grew up with the Jackson family. My children adored the Jackson family. They were my son, Mustafa, my son, Joshua, my daughter. They were involved in many ways with the Jacksons. I met Michael several years ago, and I loved him long before I met him. But after meeting him, such a gentle spirit, such a beautiful human being. Yes, the tragedy is how Michael was portrayed. And I must respectfully say to the media, you as a media person, Mr. King as a media person, all of the people that are in media, if the sins of any of those who are before the world were exposed, you would lose your magnetism. My mother said, you don't have to lie about anybody, because the truth about everybody is bad enough. Nobody comes this way without sin. Nobody comes this way without fault. But the flesh, this, argues against the spirit, and the flesh oftentimes wins. But when death comes, the flesh and the veil that the flesh uses to hide the spirit is buried. Mozart had a terrific life. Beethoven, Nat King Cole, you name it, all of us have problems, but when death comes, it puts a period to our life. The flesh goes back to the earth, but that essence that caused us to transcend time is what lives. Michael lives.